Welcome, everyone. I'm Carla Brennan, one of the teachers here. I'm glad to see you all. It seems that the weather in Santa Cruz is a little bit more mild than where I came from. Up in the mountains, it was snowing and raining all day, and I actually was able to do something today that I wanted to do it just to say that I did, which is I went skiing on Empire Grade. it was about as marginal conditions for skiing as you can get, but it was beautiful. And the only thing is I live on Elba Road, and it was pretty scary getting there. I don't know if people know Elba Road, but these roads that are steep, narrow, windy, with drop-offs are not conducive to ice and snow. But I made it, and I'm here tonight. So, tonight I'm going to talk about generosity. You know, the Buddha actually, if you read the suttas, talks a lot about cultivating positive qualities. And we do talk about that, but perhaps not as often as the Buddha did in his teachings. And these positive qualities are expressed there's a lot of them. The Brahmaviharas, which people may be familiar with, loving kindness, compassion, joy, and equanimity, forgiveness, the paramis or the paramitas. Sometimes they're 6 and sometimes they're 10. I can never figure out why, but generosity is the first paramita. It is the foundation of the other paramitas. And paramita means perfections. It's qualities that we're encouraged to perfect. And these are considered qualities, not that they're just nice to have or to be good people or to be good Buddhists, but they are the very source of happiness itself. That the cultivation of these qualities are the creation, what create the experience of joy and happiness within us, contentment and so forth, for both ourselves and for others. And that, I mean, it's pretty obvious, or it's pretty straightforward, and yet somehow we forget it, or we don't see it, how we're doing it in our own lives. But this simple practice of cultivating positive qualities, and instead of cultivating negative qualities, meaning hatred or conflict or shutting down or aversion or things like that, will change the quality of our life. You know, in all Asian, as far as I know, in all Asian Buddhist cultures, you may have heard this before, where they start the teachings with children and all the way through adulthood is with generosity. It is part of the culture. The sense of not holding on to things, of approaching life with a generous heart. It's not so much part of our culture from being a child, and it wasn't actually brought with Buddhism that much to this culture. When I started practicing in the 70s and a lot of the teachers were coming over from Asia, they were young and idealistic, kind of looking back now kind of embarrassingly young and idealistic, and the way I put it is they were all going for the gold, meaning that, you know, they had this inspiration of enlightenment and transformation, and the idea that the way to get there was through intensive retreat and mindfulness, nonstop mindfulness, and all the other supportive practices which were there and part of the culture, such as the Brahmaviharas, metta and loving kindness and generosity, were kind of ignored. You know, metta practice was only, loving kindness was kind of like a nice thing to throw in at the end of a retreat. You know, when everybody's going home, we'll do a little metta. But it wasn't seen as the legitimate and necessary practice here that it was in the countries that it came from. But that is changing as teachers and the community and the practice matures in this country. And as we look around, we can see, I think, that if anything is needed in our culture, it's things like generosity, it's things like kindness and compassion. I mean, mindfulness is good too. But if those things aren't present, what will become of our culture? The Buddha said that, this is from the Buddha, generosity brings happiness at every stage, in framing the intention, in the act of giving, and in rejoicing afterwards. So this talk's going to be kind of a variety of ideas or thoughts I have about generosity. And one thing I want to say, which some of you may have heard me say before, is that whether you know it or not, whether you're aware of it or not, whether it's conscious or not, you're always cultivating qualities. You're always practicing something. And we have a choice. We don't always take advantage of this choice, but we have a choice on what we feed, what we train in, and what we practice and what we cultivate. So many of us are cultivating and practicing our old conditioning from childhood, which may be fear, it may be anxiety, it may be loneliness, it may be alienation, it may be all those things. We can practice those things. Or we can practice connection, and we can practice kindness, and we can practice openness, and we can practice tolerance, and we can practice investigation. So I want us, to me, one of the most important keys here in practice is taking responsibility, is seeing and taking responsibility for what you're actually practicing moment to moment and day to day in your life, in your friendships, in your relationships, at work, in what you do. You know, much of our conditioning we didn't have a choice about. But there's a point where we wake up and realize that we do. And at that point, that's when practice really begins. And where we see we have a choice about how we live our lives and what we do with it. So, within this culture, we tend to have our culture is very diverse and there's really positive and negative aspects, but overall, it does seem like we're often a culture of takers. People might be familiar with that from the book Ishmael. We're kind of takers, we're kind of havers, accumulators, hoarders. We are a culture very focused on having and getting. And it's also a culture, I think there's a sort of underlying, I see it actually this more and more in some ways, where life and work and livelihood seems like a game that we're going to try to win at. And we win when we have more, and we win when we have the most. And it means there's other losers. And we look down at those who don't have as much as we have or haven't succeeded in the way that we have. And there can be a kind of entitlement in the developed Western world, an entitlement to take what we want and that we should have it, whether it's from the natural world or from other cultures or other peoples. So this culture of generosity is a radical shift from many of the messages and stories and vision of the culture that we're in. There's kind of I'm not going to go into a lot. You could say there's a psychology to hoarding or to having. It kind of runs in my family, I'm embarrassed to say. I mean, there's different degrees of it, different ways of it. I helped my parents move a few years ago, and that was kind of scary because I saw this tremendous holding on to things and a fear of letting go, and a resistance to giving up and not keeping. And I could see a lot of it, and I think we all may have this in varying degrees because it's so part of our culture. It can be actual fear of generosity, a fear of letting go, a fear of not having, which is ironic because this is in a culture of an incredible abundance. I'm not saying we all have a lot, but the overall culture is quite abundant. So I found in my family, just sort of looking at it, there was a lot of identity attached to objects and things and having. Sense of well-being, a rather tenuous sense of well-being and a sense of okayness attached to things. And things kind of filling an inner hole, a sort of lack of fulfillment. And often an inner sense of a kind of deficit some kind of inner a lack or poverty, an inner insecurity. And in an attempt to find connection or an attempt to find security, a need for holding on to things, so not necessarily valuable things, might be lots of paper bags. if you have that kind of family, you know what I mean. and a kind of what if I need it someday. So it's very important to see how we relate to the qualities and characteristics of ourselves and the things in our world. I have this friend who is mega wealthy. I don't know how wealthy, but really wealthy. I never really asked him. but we traveled together a little bit in Mexico. We ran into each other there and traveled together a bit. And I was amazed to find that he was the stingiest person I knew. That there was this unwillingness. Really striking. And there was a lot of fear of being taken advantage of, which I think is probably one of the downsides of being wealthy. I don't really know personally the experience, but I could see how that could develop. And so he goes around the world being paranoid of being taken advantage of and therefore is quite unwilling to give. And then I have another friend who is, I think, also fairly well off, this is another story, another way of being is, he told me the story. He was in New York City with his adult son, and they were walking on a street, and someone came up to them and said, asked for money. And he said that the man said that he had AIDS, and that he was ill, and that he needed, essentially was dying. This was a while ago. You can still die of AIDS now, but at least it's slowed down a bit. This was a while ago. And he needed some money for medication, at least some basic medication. And this friend is actually a retired physician. And I think he gave him the money in his wallet, which I think was about $35, something like that, and went on. And then his son turned to him and said, "What were you doing? That person was probably lying. They're probably just taking advantage of you." And my friend thought about it, and he said, "Well, you know, I hope he is lying. I hope he is lying. Because his greater wish was that he wasn't dying of AIDS. And his $35 didn't make any difference, and maybe it would help this person in some way." So I think it comes down to that our hoarding and holding on divides and separates us. Just reflect on that a moment and see for yourself. Our hoarding and holding on, our sense of stinginess, whatever that means, really divides and separates us. Whereas our giving connects us. It's very simple. Our giving connects us. It causes us to reach out and connect with another. This is from Lama Suryadas. He describes generosity, one way he describes it as a liberality of spirit that does not erect barriers between self and others. A liberality of spirit that does not erect barriers between self and others. It's really an attitude of connection and openness and understanding. As I said before, we live in a very, I would say, excessive abundant culture. And 2001, I actually got rid of most of my stuff. I traveled for a couple of years with just the stuff in my car, which was great relief. And although I had some stuff in storage, I went back there and got rid of a lot of it. My partner was with me, encouraging me, get rid of that, get rid of that. And I'm there, no, I want that, I want that. And he had this little mantra. Basically, if you ever need it again, you get another one. And in our culture, that's totally possible. You know, I have very minimal resources now, and I'm amazed at how much one can accumulate. Now that I'm in a position with very minimal resources, in some ingenuity, it's very possible to accumulate. So this idea of this fear around not having is so off base in our culture. Mostly. There's some exceptions to that, of course. Since there are some that don't have really anything. So this culture of giving, a culture of reciprocity, a culture of not holding on to things, a culture, sort of the gift economy. There's a story about, but there's a clash of cultures often in how we understand that. There's a story, and I guess this was this basic story was repeated many times in the early history of the United States, which is when Europeans began to colonize and live in the U.S., and there were still many Native Americans here and Native American tribes and so forth, that there would be obviously different kinds of interactions and intersections between these cultures. And there's a story of an Englishman who was invited to meet with some, probably on the Plains Indians, meet with some members of leading members of the Native community. And they brought out the peace pipe. And in the tradition, they shared the peace pipe. They smoked it together, is what you would do when you welcome in somebody new to meet. And then they offered him the peace pipe. That was part of the welcoming. He gave the peace pipe to him. Of course, he didn't really understand the nature of the culture, and he said, oh, this is great, this beautiful carved peace pipe, and I'll take it home, and maybe I'll give it to the British Museum someday. And he put it on his altar. Not his altar, excuse me, his mantle. I don't think he had an altar. On his mantle. And sometime later, a number of Native Americans came to his house to visit. And what he understood he didn't understand, but he began to understand that what was expected of him, that he would once again share the smoking of the peace pipe, and he would give it to someone there. That this idea of that you are given things, but you don't hold on to anything. That there's appropriate time to then pass it on. But in his misunderstanding of this, came up with the term Indian giver. So there is a possibility of a culture that's sort of pay it forward culture. There's actually a nice commercial, believe it or not, on TV. I actually have never seen. I've only seen it. I've never had the sound on. So, and I can't remember what it's for. It's for a bank or something. But there's some of you may have seen it. There's a scene where somebody is doing something, a stranger, somebody else, just on the street, helps them with something. They fall, drop something. A person is watching, and the next scene, that person who is watching is helping somebody else with something, and somebody else is watching. And the next scene, that person is helping, and this whole sort of cascade of random strangers are going around helping each other. And this, it's actually kind of a nice image of the potentiality or possibility of the contagiousness of generosity and kindness. And I recently read that, in the Scientific American Mind magazine, which is a fun magazine to read, all the research they're doing on the mind now, they had actually an article called Finding the God Spot in the Brain. which was interesting. I didn't quite buy it, but there was a story in there about some research that had been done on rats. And in this, it showed that rats, when they witness, not when they witness, when they experience, you might say, a random act of generosity, they are then much more willing or much more likely to then enact a random act of generosity to a stranger rat. So what it was that a rat would, they had two buttons, food for themselves and food for another rat. So if a rat pressed food for the other rat, then that rat was much more likely to give food to a strange rat. So the story of this is basically they were interested in how we're wired for generosity, how we're wired to actually give to strangers. That if it's in the rats, the, you know, wiring some way, it's in ours as well. You know, so being generous also reflects our understanding, can reflect a deep understanding of reality. For one thing, and this is often said, the very act of generosity is a loosening of our tendency towards grasping and clinging. It's the basic practice of letting go. It also reflects our understanding of reality in that it reflects that nothing is ours. Nothing is ours. That even our body is just a temporary borrowing of the elements of the earth that will return back. And that our breath is something that we share with each other. And we begin to see through the whole idea of ownership in its conventional sense. That everything is passing through, everything is impermanent. And this idea that everything is already, something is already broken, it's already impermanent. It's here, but it will be broken, it will be gone. And it gives us a lighter feeling through life with objects and things. It also helps, is a reflection, or also a reflection of understanding interconnectedness and interdependence. Our relatedness to each other. It also shows that, you know, what really makes us happy. It begins to reveal what really makes us happy and what's truly important, and gives trust, you might say, in our deepest nature, in our Buddha nature. So what are we generous with? What? Well, normally we think of money, things, and time as the usual things. And sure, those are good. You can figure that out for yourself. What you like, but really at the core it's generosity of the heart, and that's what I'm interested in. And that's where the quality of happiness and joy arises. There's a quality of generosity of the heart. It's a heart characteristic, it's a heart quality. And when I say that, generosity of the heart, do you get a feeling in your body or what that is like? Anybody have a sense of that, sir?
It's an expansion.
An expansion.
Yeah.
And it's this generosity of the heart, again, that is open, that is peaceful, that is connected, that is interested, that is the ground for happiness coming in, for contentment coming in. So I want to say, too, when we talk about these positive qualities, whether it's generosity or something else, please don't turn this into a lot of shoulds. How I should be, what I should do, what a good Buddhist is, and things like that. Please, I beg you to not go there. And I see people go there a lot. That's a recipe for feeling bad about yourself. That's a recipe for contraction. That's a recipe for unhappiness. Don't create ideas about what generosity is. Just practice being open in the moment. Generosity always happens right now. Don't have an idea about what it looks like or what it will be. And it doesn't mean suppressing the cranky, greedy, less than charitable aspects of our personality. This is a practice of insight. It's not a practice of obeying rules and behaving in a certain way. This is a practice of insight. So whenever we practice something like generosity, we begin to have insight into our own patterns, our own limitations, our own conditioning, and there can be actually a joy and an interest and a curiosity and in finding that out and exploring that. If you're highly critical of yourself, then it's no fun to look in and find all those places. But if you can let that go and just bring in this curiosity, you can find wonderful, you'll reveal about yourself, you'll find things about yourself and also the rest of humanity. One of the key principles of Buddhist ethics, which I think we don't talk enough about, is what's called our actions, our choices are mutually beneficial. That what we do when we're generous is to be mutually beneficial. And I actually Googled this today, Buddhism, mutually beneficial. And what came up were a lot of hits. That term came up in a lot of situations around conflict resolution, around all kinds of things related to the Buddhist path. And the Buddha came up with this idea of mutually beneficial in the way he structured the monks. That the monks would not have any possessions and the community would supply them and they would supply teachings and support on a spiritual level. So this whole, again, culture of reciprocity was possible, where there was a mutually beneficial, that this was a defining feature. So it mean, I didn't say mutually self-serving, I said mutually beneficial. Really thinking when you're generous that it is beneficial for all. That means you too. We have this idea in our culture that we're either selfish or we're kind of totally altruistic and forget about ourselves. But in this, we hold the whole picture. We are included in the equation. And there is a greater challenge to find out what is actually mutually beneficial for everyone. And this also reveals an understanding of interconnectedness. So you can begin with small acts of... I'm sure all of you are... Well, I don't know. I'm guessing that all of you are generous in a variety of ways. And this is just encouragement and hopefully inspiration to continue looking at that, what that means to you, what it means to have a generous heart, what it means to bring that quality into situations and relationships, and means to have that for yourself as well. And again, generosity is also considered to be, there's wise generosity, and really looking at what is your intention, what is non-harming, what is really wise when you're generous. So I'm just going to suggest to you, there's a line from Pema Chodron, which I love, which she says, be generous with your joy. What if you live life so that you are generous with your joy? What about being generous with your humor, with your attention and presence, with your understanding, with your experience, with your knowledge? There are so many ways for us to connect to others, to bring forth who we are and what we are in a way that is mutually beneficial. So I'm going to end. This is actually a little prayer. I think this comes out of the Tibetan Buddhist tradition, which is simply, may I perfect the sublime virtue of generosity, which liberates and releases grasping, craving, and attachment, and brings joyous contentment. Again, may I perfect the sublime virtue of generosity, which liberates and releases grasping, craving, and attachment, and brings joyous contentment. Okay, so let's just sit quietly for a minute, and then we'll have time for any comments or questions, and we'll have a few important announcements, and then we'll end for the evening. So just notice if there's any question or something you'd like to share, or is there a way that this spoke to you, or did it bring up confusion, or do you have some example from your own life about this practice of giving versus holding on to or whatever.
Recently at a women's workshop, and we probably had 60 women there, and they had encouraged us to be prepared to come with some examples of our accomplishments in our life, and it could be from any area. And it was really remarkable to see how each of these women, whether they were working or not, was involved with a philanthropic activity of their own choice, and it was really heartwarming to see, because these were not Buddhist women. They were just women throughout Northern California. No one had coached them as to how to prepare for this. Nobody even knew this was going to be one of the topics, but everyone did have something. And I thought, that was special. Okay. And some of them were really magnanimous. They were really very touching organizations that they were involved with and what they were doing with them. It was just really special.
Good. I think there is a some quiet movement in the culture towards valuing that more and more, I hope.
Actually, coming from a different country, I just want to say, to kind of balance a lot of what you said about this culture, I think the American people is an amazingly generous people at certain times, under certain circumstances. But in times of crisis, I witnessed and noticed and experienced the incredible generosity of the people in this country, which doesn't always happen in Europe, for instance. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of wanted to.
Yeah, that's good. I think that's true.
And I also want to say that I really appreciate the way that you've expanded the concept of generosity. I just realized as you were talking that I had it kind of more, boxed in the regular money, time. I can't remember what the word was, the objects.
Things,
You
notice I didn't use the word Donna the whole talk, which is the word for generosity, because it's becomes, associated with obligatory giving of money, which isn't what it is about. So, and it really is about a quality of the heart than any particular manifestation. Yeah, and I want to say, too, we have a very complicated culture which shows the best and worst and the incredible, wonderful, and awful, and it's all here. And it's important to see the full picture. Thanks. Anybody else?
I just wanted to say that I've struggled recently with the fact of starting a new business, and I've been so generous with money in terms of giving to organizations and the community. And it's interesting how I've gone through this feeling of somehow judging myself by because I can't now do that. And so I've really taken a step back and really looked at the other ways that you talked about being generous. And what I've come to realize is that it's really every moment that I'm present and that I'm being joyous with, someone that I'm just in the moment with at Mervyn's or, it's just the way I feel now, I guess, in a way of justifying, how to maintain that generosity in a different, new, unique way. And just as you were talking to, the thing that came to me was being generous. I think the thing that I my practice about being generous in that way would be more of letting down my guard with my feelings and connecting more with others. For instance, like my daughter, mm-hmm. who we have yeah. some stuff going with, and I just know it would bring us into a place of more connectedness if I just let some of my own fears about being really honest mm-hmm. with her would bring her great joy so that we could connect. And those yeah. are the ways that I'm trying to practice generosity in those ways, which, it is a practice. It doesn't, sometimes it just doesn't come naturally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and it's wonderful to see all the richness and complexity of it and explore that some. That's great. You know, and really with our friends and our family, and I think if you look at yourself, what do you really want from your friends and family? What you really want is when they're with you, for them to be with you, to be present. And that is a great, can be a wonderfully generous act, just fully be there. And you know, again, we get caught up in all this stuff and so forth, but there's a simplicity to this that is very direct and very rewarding. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Generosity of the heart, I feel, is something that kind of happens naturally when you allow that wall of separation to come down. You know, mm-hmm. when you have the courage to just kind of take the wall down. I work as a massage therapist, and so I see clients, you know, every day. You know, working in a very intimate way with people, but most of the time the interaction is fairly superficial, you know, talking about aches and pains and this and that. But lately it seems like I've had a lot of people showing up on my table who are dealing with loss and grief mm-hmm. and death. And I'm by no means a counselor or anything, but it just, it's actually been rather rewarding for me to just kind of be with them and just, you know, open up a safe space for them.
Mm-hmm.
And allow them to just grieve on the table if they need to, without feeling that they have to, you know, hold anything back, you know, out of politeness or what have you. Also being able to connect to them through my own experience of grief and just,
mm-hmm.
it's kind of a very uniting experience, mm-hmm. and it really is just about being present with them and not pulling back.
That's
and
right.
separating.
Yeah.
And it's very rewarding.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Okay, well, let's end there. Thank you all, and have a few announcements. One is there is tea?
Mm-hmm.
Tea. There's hot water anyway
mm-hmm.
to make tea with. You're welcome to stay and make some. It's in the office. Make some tea and hang out for a little bit. Get a little bit warmed up before you go outside. I'll be here for a little while, and if you have any questions or anything you'd like to talk to me about, or just say hello or whatever, because I know a number of you. The other thing is, this Saturday is an important, I think, and really wonderful opportunity to do a day-long retreat with two nuns from the Thai forest tradition. And it's from 9 to 5, and there are little flyers over there. And I want to encourage you, if you have any inkling, to come. I don't know these nuns specifically, but out of all the Theravadan traditions, my heart is with the Thai forest tradition, and the teachings in that are often very deep and very profound and very accessible and very real. And I encourage you to take an opportunity. There are aren't so many nuns around, or monastics around for that matter, and this will be a really good opportunity to support them and to support our practice and support each other. Also, on February 9th, Bob Stahl will be doing a meditation on the four primary elements. So that's Saturday, 9:30 to 4:30. So in a few weeks, there'll be another day long to learn that practice, which is a traditional Theravada practice, which isn't always so available in this country. And then that night, if you're really gung-ho, you can sit all day, and guess what? You can sit all night. It's from 10 p.m. to 5 a.m. is an all-night sitting. Of course, most people probably won't go to both, but if you want to experience something, push your edge and challenge you a little bit, that's a wonderful exercise. It's a traditional, once a month in the monastic tradition, that they stay up, or maybe actually I think more than once a month they stay up on it. So I also wanted to announce the information isn't out about it. I'm still kind of cranking out the details and stuff. I'm going to be offering two groups. One will be Friday afternoons, probably like 1:15 to 3:15. We're going to be reading the book Radical Acceptance by Tara Brach, a wonderful book that looks at self-judgment and freeing oneself from self-judgment. And that'll probably be 8 weeks, starting in a few weeks. The other one is I'm going to organize a group that will be joining in on James Perez's online course, Awakening Joy. So that's in line with what I've been talking about tonight, in the sense of developing and cultivating the qualities that bring us joy and happiness. So you'll be part of the online course, and then we'll meet once a month to do the exercises and talk about that. Don't know exactly when that will be, but I'll let you know. Another thing is, as far as I know, we still don't have a publicity person. We still need someone to help us a few hours a month to get publicity into the newspapers and stuff. It's not that labor intensive, and the expert on it is right here tonight, Isabel. So if you have any inkling that
actually, for instance, this last month it was an hour. Yeah,
it will go up and down according to what's going on. So, and we're very indebted for Isabel helping us for so long. So, I guess another quick announcement would be that if anyone's interested in a longer retreat, I'll be with John Travis up at Shasta Lake for a 9-day retreat. I'll be there as a sort of assistant. From February 8th through the 17th. And as some of you know, John Travis, he gave a talk last August here. And I know a lot of people really enjoyed that. So if you have any, that's through his organization, Mountain Stream. But there are still openings. And it's held at a ranch there, kind of a dude ranch in some beautiful country, I hear. I'm excited about both. So any other announcements? Yeah.
There's a 8-day silent meditation retreat with a Thai forest monk through Spirit Rock at the Angela Center in San Luis, March 24th through 21st.
Which monk is that?
Ajahn Jumian.
Jumian? Okay, yeah. I've heard wonderful things about him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Bill.
So on to the mundane aspects of generosity. kind of wonderful that this tradition has been supported for 2,500 years, in a purely long generosity. And part of that is continuing here. There's a couple of aspects in the hallway. We separate our generosity between supporting the physical sangha itself and teachers.
Continuing in the vein of generosity, the River Street Shelter Basket, I believe, is in the library, and they need donations of warm clothing, shoes, warm blankets, hotel, motel, toiletries. No household appliances.
or things that you're trying to get rid of.
Okay. Did you?
Oh, I was going to do the Dhamma.
Okay. Okay, hopefully I didn't miss anything, or we didn't miss anything. So let's end with a breathing in and a breathing out. It's important to remember that loving kindness, love and kindness, compassion, empathetic joy are all acts of generosity of the heart. And so we can first practice by being generous to ourselves with our own kindness, with our own tenderness of the heart of compassion. And then let us express the generosity towards everyone here with that a kind of radiating out, a kind of well-wishing, a kind of giving out in our own inner silent way to each of us here came tonight. Sense of love, kindness, may we all be happy, may we all be safe, may we all be peaceful, may we all have ease of well-being. And then let's make our generous intention go out to the world. Our intention of, well, giving kindness and love and compassion to the entire world. The practice that connects, the practice that wakes us up, the practice that sees our interconnectedness. May all beings be happy. May all beings be peaceful. May all beings be free.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.